Pour something flammable in your glass. It's Jaded Gamercast. My name is Lang. With me, as always, is Nathan. With us again today is frequent guest host Maddie. We are all here at Adepticon in the Schaumburg Renaissance, like a bunch of pimps and players. And
oh, isn't Schaumburg just that one rich dude that owns everything?
He's the rich guy who owns everything in the town of Schaumburg. Right, Maddie?
Yeah.
Oh my god, this guy owns everything.
Because like, Schaumburg, that's not very Toyota sounding. Oh, he owns Volkswagen too, that makes sense. We're like, Maddie, we're in
Schaumburg. Oh, right. We gave him like a solid 30 seconds to figure it out, too.
I didn't pick it up. Nope, it was just needed to figure it out. As if it was my blonde moment. Well, one of many blonde moments.
One of many. We all had blonde moments this weekend, I think. There was something for sure. Okay, so yes, we are here at Adepticon. We have gone through the weekend. We are doing our postcards after this, which means that we will be ripe for the postcarding, drunk style. It's snowing here. Apparently, it's been snowing like fucking crazy in Alberta as well.
Yeah.
But, yeah, we are heading back tomorrow morning. We got a lot of tabletop gaming. Well, not tabletop, board gaming to do tonight.
Yep.
But that's the plan. It has been a long weekend. So, Maddie, I'm going to start with you. What's your overall impression of Adepticon so far? Because this is, like you, this is your first time.
Well, I came for the full experience. I came on Wednesday night, so I gamed Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and then I missed my game Sunday because I didn't feel like playing Attack Wing. I was too hungover and didn't feel like doing it.
Wise call.
I know, yeah. Sleeping in for an extra 3 hours is way better. I liked it. It was surprisingly smaller than I thought it would be, seeing I'm used to going to like big comic expos like Calgary and Edmonton.
Yeah, we're used to going to the conventions, right?
Where like there's exhibitors for like two halls, right? But this one had like three halls of gaming. I didn't get to play a lot of open gaming, but I got to play lots of events. They're all well run. Really nice people, but the convention center is, like, way too expensive. The prices here are robbery.
Yeah, they really are. I mean, I went, as I was saying pretty much all, well, not all weekend, but at the beginning, when we were still having that sticker shock moment, when I was at the Olympics in Vancouver, I went to a hockey game, and the arena hockey gate prices at the Olympics were cheaper than the prices on anything in the menu here at the hotel.
Yeah, to give you guys an idea, if
Coronas
you go
were
$8. Down, Coronas were $8. If you go down to the lobby, to the little bar in the lobby, a Coke is $4.50.
Yes.
Yeah.
Coffee was $2.75 for a 6 ounce cup. No refills.
Anyways.
Yeah. Oh my god.
So in general, yes. One of the things that we are happy to report is that we actually interviewed 100%. Of every single Black Library author who appeared at Adepticon. So, Nathan, who was your favorite person to interview?
All of them. All none of them.
All none of them. That's correct.
Yes.
Black Library basically...
Black Library shit the bed, okay? Yeah, let's call it what 100%. It is. Last year at Adepticon, Black Library brought two authors. There was Graham McNeil and then some other guy that I was too drunk all weekend to remember his name. God, I didn't know him. You know, so... there was that, and they also had a massive fucking presence there. They were sharing table space with Forge World, and they had mountains of books. I mean, I think last year alone I dropped about $300 at Black Library just buying all of like their event exclusives, and they're like, if you don't order now, it's gone, and then they just bring the stacks of whatever was left. So just like, they were absolutely the number one thing that I was looking forward to the most. But for the last year, Black Library's just been shitting the bed. They had zero presence at Gen Con, which is, you know, obviously it's similar to Adepticon, but it's more board game focused.
Yeah.
And it's about 10 times bigger.
Right.
Because Gen Con is that convention feeling that you guys are used to with the numbers. You know, so like I said, they had zero presence there. They had zero presence here. No authors. You know, gossiping with the Forge World guys, they were just like, Black Library's been moving around a lot of internal things, and it looks like they've just decided to screw events until the dust has settled. And it's just such an unfortunate thing, because last year there were autographs, there were actual panels that the Black Library authors were giving, so you could go in and get talks from the guys that do this for
a
living.
Well, like that Q&A was one of the most, one of the things a lot of people were looking forward to, the ability to kind of sit down, ask the questions that you want to ask, and actually, like, interact with the authors. From what we had heard from undisclosed sources... You know, they didn't even know at Adepticon that Black Library wasn't going to show up until like a week ago.
Yes.
Because they had been emailing them. They'd been told, yeah, we're coming. Hey, this is going to happen. And at no time did it actually happen. It just, and then it, yeah, like, what, 3 days before or a week before, they were like, yeah, we're not coming. Sorry.
Yes. No, so I mean, like, that was a huge disappointment. It was easily the thing that I was looking forward to the most. It was the thing that I think both of us were. We'd been talking up the fact that we were going to do these interviews, and it was going to be fucking amazing, and it was going to be great and fun. And then again, like I said, they just fucking shit the bed and don't show up. And, you know, I don't know. I just don't get it. Like, you know... Again, I just don't get it, because, like, Black Library Expo, when they came to Chestermere, was phenomenal. Again, last year, I know that I was not the only person to spend hundreds of dollars there, so to just literally not bother showing up, I have no idea what's going on with that company. I mean, I did hear rumors and gossip from the Forge World guys that I won't get into, but it's just... it. Boggles the mind that they would pass on a convention.
The largest gaming convention in North America. Let's just put it out like right there.
The largest gaming convention in North America that is focused almost exclusively...
To their product.
To their product. Yeah. To their universe. Because, right. I mean, yes, there is all of these other games, but I will guarantee that there were more people that played 40K in events this year than all other events combined. Put together. Yeah,
well, essentially, even the exhibitor hall was just a bunch of smaller companies and Privateer Press and Forge World, right?
Right.
And essentially, so it was just the Forge World con for just vendors. Like that, that's all it really was. Everybody came to buy Forge
World. Yeah, it was a really small exhibitors hall. And I mean, I don't know if it's just an issue of you have a hard time getting exhibitors out to... I mean, okay, Adepticon is big. It is not convention big on the scale of comic conventions. It's not there yet. It will get there. Like, I don't think that that's ever going to be not the case, right? It gets bigger every year. They had to move to a new venue.
Yes, well, and that's exactly it. Is like, this venue is fucking enormous, and this venue is so big, and there's so much convention space that Adepticon felt small despite there being more people here than ever before. Unlike last year, because they had outgrown the venue last year about 3 years ago. Because the very first year that I went to Adepticon, it was at their old venue. And I thought, my God, you cannot fit another person in here. Like, every single room in the hotel, you know, it was fucking packed. And they stayed there for two more years beyond that. So this year, they decided, let's find a venue that is big enough for us to grow into. And it actually did feel empty. Like, at no point did I ever feel like the crowds were, you know, were this or that. And we played Firestorm Armada in a convention center that probably had about 2,000 people in it.
Yeah.
For the 40K team champion, team tournament, our event, the vendors hall, everything. There's probably...
There was just the convention hall we were in had, like, what? I would say 11 to 12 rows deep of, like, 15 tables across. And there was three halls like that.
Yeah.
Four?
Well, and again, even to put it in perspective, the Firestorm Armada event that we played in was 22 players.
And it was one.
And that was one row. Right? Like, we didn't even fill a row.
Well, that's what I was going to ask. I mean, I was never at those back tables, gentlemen. I mean, did we fill up the full row? I mean, you had the better perspective.
Listen, as a true Canadian, I started from the bottom. And now I'm here. Now, we'll talk a little bit more about the Firestorm event as we get there. I want to push us forward, guys. Yes, in general, this was a very well-run event. We all enjoyed ourselves. It was a lot of fun. The venue was super nice, although super fucking expensive. But really, like, yeah, it was all generally very, very positive. Let's move on to the weekly listener poll question. And then we will actually dig into some of the demos that we ran. So, the weekly listener poll questions that we asked you guys, and when this eventually comes up, I will see it, has the new release of Leviathans excited you for Firestorm Armada? Or well, not, for Planetfall.
Firestorm, colon, Planetfall.
Firestorm Armada, you interrupted me, and that's why I didn't get there. So, with 55% of the vote, you guys said yes. In general, I think people were very excited for Planetfall to begin with, but yeah, seeing those big models, seeing the range expand a little bit. I mean, that was one of the core complaints that we had when the game first came out, was we didn't have, like, a properly big range, right? Mm-hmm. Now, this is, like, a launch of a new game, so, I mean, I think that's understandable for the most part, but, yeah, it's nice to see this bigger stuff come out.
Yeah, well, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I know that I, for one, went from... Because, like, I was stoked about Planetfall before it came out. We picked up the starter. We kind of jumped in 2 feet. But that really did kind of fall away and fizzle, because it was really hard to maintain that momentum and that enthusiasm when all you had were core helixes for the first 2 months.
Yeah.
And then when the heavy helix came out, you got the same, you know, large model that you had with a turret swap, and the same medium models you already had from your core with a turret swap. And
actually, again, the directorate models are not the same model with a turret swap. They're one piece.
That's interesting. I do know that the Terrans are also one piece, but again, it's that same... It's that it's the identical
same chassis, right?
It's the same chassis, which is great. That is exactly how military organizations function. Let's take this part that works. We can swap this out, customize, do whatever. It's great, but it's hard to be excited about the same models for 3 straight months. And now what do we have? We have some of the biggest, coolest looking models out there, along with these amazing rules that we've seen for the first three. We just had the next three Leviathan models shown. I can't wait to read the rules for them as well and see what it is that they're doing, because we've seen three different things.
Yes.
And it's just like we're finally starting to see the variety in the game that gets people excited, because now it's not just an issue of let's play 3,000 points, one core helix. Hooray.
Right.
But we're actually
or
looking
an
at
helix.
Well, yeah, but like the other thing is Leviathan and heavy helixes are opposite.
Yeah.
Is take a drink. They're opposite. So now you actually have to make that choice. Do I take two Leviathans and can't have a heavy? Do I take two heavies, can't have a Leviathan? Do I take an allied Xenian or Kurok, depending on your faction, Leviathan, and just cancel out all of those options in the Helix? And we're finally starting to get to the point where list building becomes interesting. The modeling is interesting. Honestly, I heard more people excited about Planetfall this weekend. And don't get me wrong, the Firestorm Armada group is obviously very open to it, but even just like lay people that were walking by the demo table going, oh, this looks really cool, because the models are fucking great.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, so Adam says, yup, the game looked boring, too homogenous, now not so much, but waiting for the less pathetic races to follow suit. It's all about dinosaurs and crab people. Well, Adam, you will be happy to see that the dinosaurs and crab people do have their Leviathan pictures released. One of them is a gigantic Squiggoth, and the other one is a tripod walker from War of the Worlds. And then if you play spiders, it's a scorpion.
It's scorpion.
Giant fucking scorpion mech, and it's amazing.
It's an eight-legged scorpion, so it's still got
It's still kind of an arachnid.
Yeah.
It's a hybrid.
Listen, I don't give a shit. I am so beyond amped for that one. Like, I literally...
That's a nice ass
I literally did a faction swap. Because, I mean, I didn't have any of the core helixes yet. I've been busy painting other things, mostly for Adepticon and Out of the Basement and other events that were coming up. So there was, I owned one Terran Heavy Helix, and when that picture came out, I swapped it straight for a Relthoza, and it's just like, I'm going whole ham, because I love that fucking Scorpion Leviathan mech. I can't wait to see the rules.
I think one thing for Spartan that they're doing good with this release is that they're showing that there might be the new kids on the block when it comes to like ground-based games, but they're building some of the best large models out there. Like, everyone you see, like, even the War of the Worlds mech thingy is... It's okay.
I like it.
But it's...
I know you don't like it.
I would like to see better pictures, because all I've seen is that one top-down one. I'd like to see...
Oh, if you go to their... If you go to the blog, they have full 360
pictures.
Yeah,
they have a full
360.
Oh, okay. In which case, I'll do that when I get
home. But they're putting their name on the map, saying that we can hang with Privateer Press. Maybe not Games Workshop yet, but all the smaller companies, they're doing really nice big models. Like, they're a solid almost 2-3 in the power rankings right now for game companies that are making nice, big, large models. Which is saying something good for a company that's just got on the market, really.
All right. So Rex says, yes, as a Dendrenzi player, I'm happy with my Leviathan. The high DR, huge amounts of firepower. The fact that its head is a skydrop designator, and the fact that it can drop in, what's not to like? And I think that that's a good point. One of the things that we kind of repeatedly run into with big stuff like this, where we break it down, is it's like, oh, there's nothing in here. Like, what would you want with this big, stupid model that does nothing? Like, the big models should want to get you excited for the game, right?
Yeah,
like, those should be the centerpiece, showpiece models in your army. And with Firestorm, it really does appear like they've hit that mark, right? Like, it feels like they've been able to find what the fans of these armies really enjoy, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I would have never thought I wanted a Helicarrier. Oh my god, I want a Helicarrier so bad now.
Well, that was like me when I saw the Scorpion Leviathan. Because again, I was very much on the fence between Terrans and between Ralthosa. Because again, they each appeal to a different part of my sensibilities. And I was going to go towards Terrans by simple virtue of the fact that I have a gigantic Terran fleet in Firestorm. So for me, it was just an issue of, hey, at least they'll match and it'll be great. But as soon as that, I saw that model, I was like, I was just fucking smitten. And I mean, this, I also studied the fucking Terran one, and I felt the same way with the Terran one, where it's like, oh, nothing's going to get cooler than that. I mean, I know you love the Helicarrier, and the Dendrenzi one's like tall and, you know, thin and mean looking, but just how fucking fat and full of like fucking the spinning weapon systems on his shoulders. Like, I love that Terran Leviathan. And then I saw the Ralthosa, and I was like, I have never wanted a giant Mecha Scorpion more than I want a giant Mecha Scorpion right now.
Well, the big thing that got me into the Dendrenzi was in the pre-release photos. They showed...
Don't hit the table.
The Dendrenzi Leviathan, right? Sorry. And that's what got me into the Dendrenzi, because I'm a Ralthosa player first. And what got me into the Dendrenzi, which is probably my worst fleet, is the actual giant Leviathan. That was one of my favorite models to just even see in the preview.
Yeah.
That sold me on the game.
Yeah, you know, and again, they're all great models. I do really want to get a better look at the Aquan one. For me, it's the only one that has not excited me at all. Like, I can look at the Directorate stuff, and I really hate the Directorate aesthetic in space, but I look at their Planetfall stuff, and I'm just like, oh, man, these are fucking sick. Like, it, you know, that aesthetic works, and even that Helicarrier fucking works. And the Dendrenzi, like, I get why everyone has a favorite race, because they've nailed the aesthetic, and they're all unique, and they're all great. So it's just like, I totally get it. But yeah, like I said, I've never wanted a Robo-Scorpion, like, as much as I, dear God.
I hurt inside every night. Thanks to everyone who voted on the weekly listener poll. You can find those at jadedgamercast.com. We will have another question for you at the end of the show, of course, if we remember. All right, so let's move on to some of the demos that we ran. We demoed three games in the exhibitor hall. Those three games were the ones that we felt were the most interesting, the most exciting. Yep. We're going to break those down here. So the first one that we went through was Mercs.
Yes.
It is by a company that also does Myth. They've also got a Kickstarter going for a couple of other games. They're doing a board game called Conversions coming out as well. And I think it's MegaCon Games was what it was. We'll have the video for it. You guys will actually be able to watch the intro video, and where Nathan rolls terribly all times.
It is a superpower. Like, for a while there, I was just like, I don't even get mad about it, because I used to have good dice. Like, I remember when we had that game of 40K with your Nurgle. Like, my Dark Eldar dice were on fucking fire. I mean, yeah, they turned to shit afterwards, but it's just like, I used to have good dice. But now, it is a superpower how goddamn poorly I can roll. So, to give you an idea, like, the, you know, Mercs is a game, as it was explained, is a 5-on-5 model game. It's kind of all of the points are...
Skirmish game.
Yeah, it's a skirmish game, but all of the points values are balanced out so that you don't even deal with points. You just pick the five models you want to play, and you go. So, it's not an issue of, hey, I can't take this, or I can't take that. And everything's unique, so it's not like you can take just five of your heavies and call it a day. You cannot have more than one. So that's
Looking at a leader, you're looking at a heavy, you're looking at a medic, an analyst.
You know, and that's exactly it. And that's really what kind of fills out the your force and goes. So we started the demo of 3-on-3, and the first thing that you do is you roll an initiative dice for each of your individual models.
Yeah, this is a game played solely with D10s.
Yes, solely with D10s. So you roll your initiatives, and then, you know, each model activates as per its initiative roll. So I rolled a 2, a 4, and a 6, and the guy running me through the demo rolled a 6, an 8, and a 10. So I had, like, I went last. All of my shit went last. And on the very first shot of the game, when he's like, this is how heavies work, he just fucking creamed my leader. Because he's like, this is a really hard shot for me to make. I need to roll 7 or higher on a D10. And with my 3 shots, he rolled an 8 and a 9 and a 10.
Yeah.
And he just fucking plowed my leader. The first shot, he just fucking ganked him. And he's like, I could see the look on his face. Like, he was in disbelief. Like, he's probably run this demo 100 times this weekend. And that has literally never happened. But I'm playing a miniature game with dice, so of course it's going to happen to me.
And so you get crushed.
Oh, I absolutely got crushed. No, but basically, the interesting thing about Mercs is that Mercs as a game is basically like the I don't want to say casual because I feel like the game system has a lot of depth to it. There were a lot of rules, and obviously with the intro, he glossed over them. But there are some interesting mechanics, and the real selling feature is that it's designed to be played on a flat table. They have all these cards that make up your scenery, so you can mark off your playing field, put them down, and then you just go. You don't need a tape measure. You can literally play the game with a single D10.
So for real. You do not need a tape measure because your measuring implement for movement is the card that your character's stats are printed onto.
Yes, absolutely. It's this really ingenious thing where they just have these half circles cut out in various places for where you would put the card slotted into the model's base. You can rotate it up to 90 degrees so that way you can maneuver and things like that. And then you literally just put your model in one of those other grooves on the other side of the card. It's really fast. It's really smart. I love the movement system. It's probably the most unique thing that I have ever seen in a miniature war game. Because the one thing about all the demos we took, and even the one that we were thinking of taking, and then the guy was like boring as fucking Wonderland.
What, Elysium or whatever it was called?
Yeah, Ethereum.
Ethereum.
The guy that we were talking to was just so bored.
He was. It looked like he was burnt out.
Now, don't get me wrong. Yeah. This is at, like, the last day of the vendor hall, like a couple of hours before it's closing. But wow, he did not sell the game at all.
He did not want to run us through a demo, and he was making that very fucking clear.
He was like, God, just not now, right? Guys, please.
But what was so funny is that every single demo we played, they were marketing it to us like we were 40K gamers, and that goes back to Black Library, you're fucking morons. Because they'd be like, oh, this is interesting, because it's like a unique activation, you know, player swapping activation, so you'll activate a model, and they'll activate a model, and it goes back and forth like
we're
that.
We're just like, we play Firestorm.
Yeah,
no,
I was just like, we play Spartan games, we're good. But yeah, like I said, Mercs was a very interesting game. You could literally play it with the card, the cards you need, a single D10, and your five models.
And your five models.
And you can play it fucking anywhere. Because, like, even when we were looking at potentially spending the money to get into it, we're just like, you know, this is one of those things where it's just like, hey, go to the restaurant. You can literally play while you're waiting for your fucking food.
Well, you could play on your table, waiting for your food, with your D10, with your cards that make up your scenery. I mean, I was really interested in Mercs. Dan and Gene, who do the
Trapped
in the Basement cast, love the game Mercs. They've been playing it for a while now. That was one of the reasons why I was drawn to that table. And I mean, like, I really liked it. I was really, really interested in it. The models in general are good.
Yes.
They're not great.
Yes, and that was it, kind of it for me. Is like we checked out a lot of different games. And I think of everything we looked at, except for Ethereum, I would put Ethereum and Mercs as about the same. They're not bad models.
I thought the Ethereum models were fucking terrible.
I think some Ethereum
They were bad concepts. Like, well, yeah. They were poorly molded.
I was
like,
going to say, bad concepts for sure. I think that there were some, like, both factions had it. Like, I think that the EU faction stands out for Mercs, but a lot of their other stuff is so generic it looks the same, and then you look at Ethereum. But anyway, not getting into that, the quality of the models is probably it was definitely the lowest of the three games that we did demo. And when we were looking at it, it was just an issue of, with me in Calgary, you in Edmonton, who the fuck would play?
Right.
Because it was like, even if we got in, we each got the starter, we'd play 2-3 times a year. Like, if there was more following of Mercs, I would have been in. Whole ham. I love the card mechanic. I think the fact that, like I said, a single D10 is all you need. Obviously, if you have, like, 2, 3, or 4, you never have to roll, like, the one multiple times to resolve something. But the fact that you can do it, it's basically a minimalist war game. The same reason why Strange Aeons works in a lot of ways, where it's just like, look at my Threshold gang. It's three guys. It's super easy to just truck around.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that I also liked about the game in general was that they had expansions for it that were coming out as well. They were putting out new stuff. But for the most part, the price point was the lowest of the three games we looked at.
Hands down.
Yeah, they said they're going to sell us like four starters.
Starters and two rule books with a whole set of seventh models and extra cards was like
$180.
So $45 a person
to get into it. Yeah, it worked out to $45 per person. And what they mean by seventh models is that The way Merc sells the game is that each faction has basically a faction box which contains the six models that you have in that faction.
The six options, because that's exactly it.
It's like when you build your list, you pick five of those six. Mm-hmm. That's your list. There's no such thing as duplication. You can't spam. You can't do any of that shit, which is phenomenal. And the fact that you don't even have to worry about points because it's balanced by... I pick these five and go. So that's what I mean by seventh model is as part of the expansions of that game, they had started creating one additional model per faction, except for, of course, the faction I was interested in. Because they're like, EU doesn't have a seventh, so you could just get to pick someone else's seventh model. And I was like, well, what the fuck use is that?
You know, well, like because they were brand new, right?
No, and that's exactly it. And you could tell they were brand new because the quality of their models
was much better.
Was really much better than everything else.
You saw those and you were like, that's my shit right there.
Yeah, absolutely. Because like there were some aesthetics that it's just like they were interesting concepts. You know, and this was the one thing that kind of killed it for me is like they came up with that interesting concept and then they finished. They're like, okay, now we're just going to do weapon swaps across these six models and we're done.
Yeah.
You know, it was very Sisters of Battle-esque in terms of just how static each faction felt, except for the one that I was interested in, the EU, the newest faction, because those were dynamic across the board. I felt like you had six different models because even in that starter set, the three of the faction I played all pretty much look the same.
You're right.
The one thing about the aesthetic that I noticed when I was looking at it was that I said this to you guys before. It's just like the greatest hits all stars of power armor because everybody's in power armor. So if you don't like power armor, maybe it's not going to be the aesthetic for you. But it looked really
not
good.
Not power armor from the 40K perspective, but power like armor from kind of modern, more of an anime, modern anime perspective.
Think of the Master Chief.
Master Chief, right? Like Halo power armor.
Yeah. They all looked like that, which was good, but it was seven different takes on that.
Yeah, it really was. Like I said, nothing bad. I thought Mercs was good. I was close to taking the plunge, and honestly, if we hadn't checked out a couple of other games, I would have. Like hands down, I was ready to spend the money, but because it was our first stop, that's why I was just like, "Shit, are we going to be buying every starter set we demo? Like, can we just come back to this?" And then I kind of fell in love with games we demoed a little bit later.
After that, we demoed. Yeah, Mercs was by far my favorite. It was the one that I wanted to get into more than anything else, but. It was one of those things where, I totally agree with Nathan, where it's like, we have no community for it where we are locally. If I pick it up, who am I playing with? Is it just going to be Matt and I playing the same game again, where it ends up like Heavy Gear, where we pick up all this shit and we start playing it and we go whole ham, only to end up putting it on a shelf and never touching it again after 6 months, right? I will likely get into Mercs. I want people to get into Mercs because I think it's a fun game.
And I agree. And because, like, that's the thing is, like, even locally, there is no one that stocks it. So 100% of all purchases would need to be made online. And if more people got into it, I would be in it 2 feet. Because, like I said, I loved the EU factions models. I thought that the game mechanics were clever enough that they were clever and simple, and I thought the movement was beautiful. Like
brilliant. Really good.
That movement mechanic was better than any other miniature game I have ever played in my life. It worked flawlessly.
All right, so moving on to the next game. Anybody who's interested in Mercs, you can check out MegaCon Games. Those are the guys who make it. They also make Myth. They also make Emergence Event, stuff like that. Emergence Event isn't out yet, but that was one of the ones I was also interested in. All right, so after we played Mercs, we went over and we played Wild West Exodus, in which I proceeded to thrash fuck out of Nathan solely because of my strategic, like...
It was brilliance.
No, it wasn't brilliance. It was like instinct, like strategic instinct. To stand on that side of the table when I walked up to
you saw Abraham Lincoln and you're like,
dude,
oh,
Abraham Lincoln with a fucking axe.
In Chicago.
We're in.
How can I lose?
So basically, we've talked about Wild West Exodus models before.
A few times.
A couple of times. We've talked about them for Model of the Week and stuff like that. Generally, they have some pretty cool models. Very cool. This is a steampunk, cowboy, western-based tabletop game. It's a skirmish game, again. And it is, they had a Kickstarter. The Kickstarter was very successful. And now they're starting to kind of push a little bit more. They have another Kickstarter that they're either running now or is coming up where they're going to be incorporating aliens.
It's running now. Okay, so I mean, like, real talk time. Wild West Exodus has the best model range of any of the games that I looked at today. And I mean, not even just the ones that we were demoing, just anything that I walked through in the vendor hall. I think Wild West Exodus has the best fucking aesthetic. They kill it. They kill it 100% on every faction that they're doing. So the universe of Wild West Exodus is basically in the early 1800s, aliens come to Earth and start fucking around with us. So that's why you've got alien technology. The new Kickstarter is actually bringing in alien factions because right now all of the factions are human-based.
Yeah.
You know, so it's just like humans benefiting from this technology, fighting it, a lot of steampunk, you know, steam-powered kind of stuff. It's a really interesting setting. Honestly, it was probably the game that I was the most excited to demo.
And then most disappointed after the demo. And then
most disappointed after the demo.
Yeah, so
basically... It's not because you just jobbed, right?
Oh, yeah. No, and it has nothing to do with the fact that my dice were my dice, and Lang's ability to roll nines on a D10 is
fucking like six nines unparalleled.
Holy shit.
Oh,
like,
that was amazing.
It was...
Nathan rolls a nine, I crit.
No, well, yeah. I was just like, I couldn't even be mad, because you're just like, look, whatever. Like, it fucking right. happens.
So basically... if you were to imagine a tabletop game with the kind of simplest, most straightforward, old-style skirmish game rule set, this is essentially it. Where Mercs had a very innovative, interesting skirmish game rule set, where we loved the movement, where we really enjoyed the way that they had scenery with cards. It was very light. It was very easy. You could pick it up very quickly. The layout of the stats on the Merc cards with their special rules and everything was very clear, very, very creatively developed. Yeah. Wild West Exodus was just
the opposite.
The stats vomited onto a card. And it was almost hard to read the card because you just couldn't... And again, like, that might sound close-minded to the people who have played it before where they're just like, what are you talking about? It's just a list of numbers and then rules at the bottom. What are you, a fucking idiot? But when I first looked at that card, I had no idea what the fuck was going on.
Well, I thought that the M was move, and then he's like, no, your quickness.
Your quickness is your move.
Is your move, so you have a quickness of six. And I was like, oh, okay, yeah, that makes sense. And it's just like, as you would go through and you would touch those stats, it makes sense. But again, to the layperson that's just going to look at it, I mean, there are so many games that use cards these days. When I look at a War Machine card, I literally know everything about that fucking model. When I look at, even having played Mercs for 10 minutes in an intro game, I could navigate
the card. You knew everything on that card.
And I knew everything on that card, and maybe there was a couple of...
Special rules
or shorthands.
Reference to a special rule.
Yeah, or things like that I didn't know yet, but I could look at the card, and I instinctively was able to just read it and figure out what to do.
Right away, you were like, right, the guys he's playing, heavy armor, heavy weapons. The guys I'm playing, fast, ability to move and shoot.
Well, but you know, yeah, and that's exactly
his
it.
Has
like,
higher armor break, mine you know, has lower armor
maybe
break.
Maybe it's because I rolled so poorly on initiative and I got to watch him go multiple times before I had the opportunity. But by the time it got to me with Mercs, he wasn't even coaching me. I was like, all right, I got three moves. So I'm going to go here, and I'm going to go here, and all right. Now
and my card says I can move and shoot. And now, yeah, exactly. Yeah, it says minus one move. Oh, perfect. Bing, 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 bing.
Yeah,
blank shot.
And then I was like, okay, so I get this many dice. And it's just like I instinctively knew all of that. With Wild West Exodus, when I was first looking at the card, I honestly did not know what it said.
I had no idea what was going on.
Make heads or tails of it, and I was like, oh, okay, so I got this range weapon, I got this.
Well, it's like Maddie said, like, the only thing you identify instantly is that the cost of this guy is more than the cost of this guy. This guy cost $200 to buy, or $250, which was
Abe Lincoln. Was $230, Geronimo was $215, and trust me when I say that Geronimo should have been, like, $80 cheaper, based on how much he got the shit kicked out of him.
There's one thing to be said about when companies make these smaller like skirmish games, just like using a universal language that gamers would know, right?
Yeah, that's a really good point. Quickness for movement is not, you're making the wrong choice.
Yeah.
M should be movement. Like, especially, like
M
you
is
said,
movement in everything.
Well, exactly. Like you said, these guys are marketing to Warhammer 40,000 gamers, Warhammer gamers. Guy, the prominent gaming system on the planet is here. Yep. Right? Even if you're fucking playing D&D, M is movement, right?
Yeah,
like,
quickness,
we know.
Quickness sounds like initiative.
Well, exactly. Quickness
really,
sounds
yeah,
like
yeah.
something else entirely. So you're already taking what's here, and you're building a totally different stat line that people don't read right out of the out of the gates. Okay, so Nathan and I played a game. It was not fun. I had to start role playing in order to make it fun.
Yes,
where I decided that my Confederate or what was it? Confederate?
You were playing Union.
My Union soldier was raised by a rich family, trained as a soldier, and as soon as he took a hit, got scared and ran away.
Yes,
so I ran him off of the table with my two actions.
No, but Abe Lincoln was there to mop everything
up. Yeah, well, Abe Lincoln then destroyed everyone else.
Absolutely. Now, basically, I think the biggest reason I was disappointed in Wild West Exodus, and this was something we talked about a lot right after, well, not right after, but we spent a long time talking about it after playing the demo, is that unlike any other skirmish game I think that I've played, unlike Mercs, unlike Strange Aeons, unlike Bushido, unlike the games of Infinity that I have watched being played, Wild West Exodus boils down to your boss will kill fucking everyone. Everything else that
it's
you are
taking...
It's
the original Lord of the Rings.
Yeah,
it is. Aragorn mops up an entire table of Uruk-hai by himself.
Or like I said before, like the Wizards of the Coast fucking Star Wars miniature game, where it's just right. I take Mace Windu, I kill 20,000 droids.
No,
you can't beat me. He doesn't die.
It's Eurohammer.
No, and again, and that was what was so fucking disappointing, because when you look at the models, when you look at their two-player starter set, right, you got your two bosses, you got your two underbosses, you got 10 hired hands.
You got the two heavies.
The two heavies, the two weapons guy, and you look at it and you're like, you know, this is a really neat box, but then when you play the game, like, to give you an idea, so Abe Lincoln mauls through my leader, Geronimo, in... two turns. It did not... And I had a turn where...
You had initiative.
Well, yeah. I had initiative, went first. I moved into position. I roared at you, which stripped you of an action.
Yeah.
You then ran into combat, and you did 6 wounds, took the... Basically, in your one turn, in your first turn, you took half of my health off. And then when I went back, and it was my turn, I used every one of my actions to attack. I did everything there. And I did 0 wounds to you. And then it was your turn, and you just fucking killed him. Now, I get dice have a lot to do with these things. And I totally also get that, like, when it's boss versus boss, you're probably going to have a one-sided action like that. But what happened next is you moved Abe Lincoln into melee range with my two basic just Johnny hired hands.
Yep.
And...
squaws.
Wow, we're going there, are we?
That's what they were called.
Okay.
Were they not?
No, I don't think they were. I'll pretty much guarantee the card did not say squaw.
Is that racist?
That is very racist.
Yeah. All
right. Really?
Yeah.
Holy shit. No, all right. Well, I apologize. I'm taking it back, apparently. All right.
So anyway, listen, I had my two hired hands that were there, and I had the hardcore melee faction. Because, like, when your basic troopers, when your basic hired hands got in there, I was fucking your face in. Like, my guys had so many more attacks, higher rate of fire, higher strength, higher melee abilities. And that's part...
I had armor, but you didn't
kill any in combat, Nathan.
No, I did not.
No, you literally did nothing the
entire
game.
And I think that's part of the reason why you did run that guy away and kind of role-played it a little bit.
Well, that was exactly why.
Was because you're just like, oh my god, these guys are going to fucking cut me in half. So when Abe Lincoln came and got into melee range, he was completely out of action, so he couldn't actually take a swing and kill either of these two poor chumps, went back to me... I threw a total of 16 attacks at Abraham Lincoln out of my two guys over, you know, everything there. And on 16 attacks, I did 3 points of damage. And, like, so...
What did I do to Geronimo in, like, a round and a half?
In a round and a half, you did about 30-odd
like 30
points of
damage?
Well, and this is also my boss, who is a better fighter, with better armor, with better everything.
One of the best mechanics, though, well, I don't know if it's a good mechanic yet, is that once you attack, you get to attack back, and then if he attacks, you get to attack back.
I didn't
back,
like
right?
that. I felt like that was clunky.
It looks... Exactly. I thought it was going
to
be clunky,
too. And then you get to roll one back, and then you get to roll one back, because you guys continue to slap fight.
But essentially, if you have 3 turns of combat, because you get 3 actions, and you do 3 attacks, you're getting 9, he's hitting you back 3 times. That could be like a combo that takes 5 minutes to go through, right?
Yeah.
If you're playing like a bigger game.
I would like to see it in action on a bigger scale, but it's just like, what jumped out to me was the fact that there is no way in hell that a hired hand is going to do anything other than tar pit another hired hand.
That's what
completely disappointed me about the game, is what it comes down to is... Whose boss can do the most damage to the other faction before the inevitable boss versus boss combats that have to happen? Unless, of course, you take Jesse James, in which case he just stands there and murders every last motherfucker with his pistol. Oh, yeah, he
six guns all day long.
Bah, 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 bah. You'll never get to him. And again, like, that's what disappointed me, is I have played enough skirmish games where it's just like, don't get me wrong, Bushido. I think Bushido's my favorite skirmish game right now. If I play, you know, you will always have that one boss carry. You're paying a ton of points for this guy. You know that he's going to be good. There is a hard counter from everything. So it's just like, you know, if Terry takes a hardcore combat character, my wizard will literally rip the soul out of his eyes the moment he makes, yeah, all right, I have line of sight to you. I rip your soul out of you. You die. There is a hard counter to everything. So even when you have a big difference maker character, you can deal with them. Wild West Exodus, at least based on the demo of three models versus three models, felt like a worthless game of Hero Hammer. And listen, that's what was disappointing.
If we call it a bad demo, we can call it a bad demo. And that's not because it was run poorly. Sean was really great. He actually did a good job describing the game.
He did a great job.
But yeah, the models, gorgeous. The game, disappointing.
Yes, so right. I mean, we do have enough stuff that probably in the future, we will revisit it at a larger point scale. Because right now, we do have four factions worth of hired hands plus bosses. So this is a game that I think that probably before 2015 is up, we will revisit. We will play on a larger scale and see if that is what happens, or if it's literally just a 215 versus 230 point boss and then 20 points of hired hands is just
All standing around cheering
is just a bullshit way to play the game. And I think it is, because there are so many people that play it and are excited about it and really enjoy the game. And I just, for me, the game sucked. It wasn't even because I lost. It's just, so it's just this one dude. And the whole thing is how quickly can I get this one dude into combat to fuck shit up?
Because while Lincoln was fighting Geronimo, we had our hired, you know, my Union soldiers and your fucking
warriors. Let's go warriors.
Native American peoples. we're basically slap fighting each other and doing no damage
for multiple turns. A point here, a point there. Yeah. Like, they were very evenly matched. I mean, the speed at which Abe Lincoln rolled over Geronimo, I think, was
embarrassing.
It was a testament to how many nines Lane could roll. Because, like, holy mother, like, everything. Because, like, basically, the combat mechanic is everything has a particular strength value. So when I roll my dice for attacks, I need to succeed on my melee skill. And then you look at all of the successes will all be whatever strength it is. So then your opponent has an armor value, will roll a d10, add his armor, and compare it to the strength. So in Abe Lincoln's case with an armor of 3 versus Geronimo's strength of 7, all Lang had to do was roll a 4 or better to mitigate all incoming damage. And that was why when I would roll my combat, even though I'd have 3 attacks on, you know, for this one action, because rate of fire 2 and my melee skill rate, so I'd roll my attacks. When I would hit Lang, and I hit you often because Geronimo had a very high melee skill.
Yeah,
it was
very really
easy for me to hit, but I would hit you, and then like I said, you have a 70% chance of succeeding on your save. So just like, you just mitigated every last bit of damage, and then you looked at Geronimo with his 0 armor, so everything that you did, I had to, like, and your strength was, what, 7 as well?
Mm.
I had a 30% chance of mitigating damage. So that's why I'm just like, you fucking tooled me. Is this game good or bad? I honestly can't say right now, but I was disappointed.
It hurts because after you come from a game like Mercs, which you feel like has a lot of potential,
mm-hmm.
and that, like, even on a small scale, what we're given is a very good, like, you know, it's very indicative of the game that you could see on that full 5-man skirmish scale. You instantly see the potential. You instantly see when I would be able to play this. When you look at Wild West Exodus, you go, man, those models are cool. And that's all you, like, that's the only thing you can come away with it as. I did not have fun in the intro game.
I did not have fun in the intro game. And again, it had nothing to do with losing. It's an intro game. We know that this is meaningless. It's about learning mechanics.
Well, as Maddie said, it's the 4th edition 40K starter set. Dark Eldar versus
the third edition Abe Lincoln is just gonna fucking murder you.
They just fed Abe Lincoln a jobber just for like the fucking weekend, Because literally, I even asked the guy, I'm like, how many times did the bear won? He couldn't give me an answer.
Well, yeah, because again, like, to me what it was that armor differential. Yeah, Abe Lincoln on a 4+ on a D10 eliminates all incoming damage. Geronimo needs to roll a 7+. Yeah. So like I said, that was the problem which made it so unbalanced. But even then, the general opinion I had was, your boss will do all of the lifting, your hired hands exist to just clog up the game. And I wanted to play one-on-one, why am I playing a miniature game?
That's right. Yeah. All right, so after that, we moved on to the people who make Super Dungeon Explorer and super hilarious card games like Tentacle Bento.
Oh my god, I can't wait to play that. Are we going to play that tonight?
We might.
We have
to. This is Ninja?
Right? Ninja Division.
Ninja Division. Ninja Division is making a game called Relic Knight. It kind of has its tabletop elements. It works like a standard skirmish-style tabletop game. However, it is a fusion of that and a card game. There are no dice involved. It is all dependent on the skills that you have as well as the cards that you draw from what is referred to as an Esper deck. So, for anybody who's unaware of this game, it is a horny anime game. And it is a super awesome mecha robot anime game.
Right.
And then it's a horny anime game again. So every woman is the perfect anime woman with massive tits and super cleavage and ass up in the air. There's literally a faction of girls riding robots with their ass up. Like, if you ever go to, like...
It's Bubblegum Tokyo 2040.
Right. Like, if you ever go into a comic hobby shop and they have all those, like... figurettes of like the super slim clad anime chick bent over a sniper rifle.
Or the huge sword that's like
right
on her like 90-pound frame.
Exactly. 90-pound frame, no armor, barely covering her nipples.
60 pounds of it are her breasts.
Or the skin suit.
Yeah.
The skin suit that is so tight that she could basically be naked. That is this game.
See, what I mixed
in with demons. Demons and mixed in with anime robots and anime soldiers and like...
So, yeah, I mean, basically, the aesthetic does have a very anime feel
to it. It is anime.
It is 100% anime. You need to know this going in. With that being said, what I appreciated about Relic Knights is they seem to know and they seem to get it. That is why they have the horny pervert anime faction.
The entire anime pervert faction.
Yeah, the entire anime
faction.
But it is only faction, and that's what I like about it is each and every faction is a different anime aesthetic. So you have a Gundam faction. You have a pirate faction. You have the hentai faction.
Right, like
you
that,
have the knight faction.
Medieval knights.
Yeah, which I loved. That got me into it. There's two models that were just like, I will play this game just for these two.
That's absolutely. So I mean, that's what I appreciate about the game is they are anime. They're unrepentant about it, and that's fine. But each individual faction is based around a different style of anime. So basically, if you are even remotely into the anime aesthetics, even if you don't get anime story or anime books, because like that's where I'm at. Yeah. I can look at things and be like,
or
those
Valkyrie
are really
Drive.
Cool. Oh, Valkyrie Drive.
Oh, God.
God, aren't we all into that?
Oh, God, I mean, no.
I'm hard right now. I don't know what you're talking about.
No, I instantly threw up on my dick.
Relic Knights, that's the aesthetic. If you do not like anime even a little bit, you're not going to be interested in the game. I do like the aesthetic, so I was able to get a faction that also has a Penny Arcade limited edition model.
Same with mine.
Yes, that was how Lang and I decided, is I wanted the Fruit Fucker 9000, but you did too. Nothing else really floated your boat. So I went with Pirates with Gabe and Merch. You have Tycho and Fruit Fucker for your... I don't even know what faction that is.
Divination?
Sure, something.
Divination Squad, something like that.
Basically, they're like the detective anime faction. Yeah. It's really the vibe that I got off of it was like the fucking, like, this is an anime detective model, or detective series.
The Doctrine fashion.
Sure.
Team Yellow.
All right.
So they all have colors, so just...
You can
really just call them Team Color.
Well, and you know, in fairness, I think that's a fucking amazing way to do it when it comes to getting gifts from people for this game. Where it's just like, no, you just need to get the purple boxes.
Yeah.
Anything, any purple box works. So I thought that was clever. But let's talk about the game. The game does basically blend aspects of collectible card games, like Magic the Gathering.
Right, like you play with a mat.
Yes.
Like you, a card mat.
You have
it looks like straight off a Yu-Gi-Oh! Set.
Right, Yu-Gi-Oh! Yeah. Pokemon. Like if you've ever played a collectible card game with a card mat, you will see very similar elements here. You play with tokens as well. Tokens that are counting up, you know, the amount of damage that you have or whether or not you're dead.
Mm-hmm.
But the game is played via tabletop elements.
Yes. So you have your models. You have a board. It has scenery. It has all of this jazz. You measure out your movement, etc. I thought that the game system was very clever. I thought that the Esper deck works because, again, you're going to have your hand of cards and you can discard at the end of any activation. So if you look at it, you're just like, okay, this and that. But you have to preset your activation order. So there are situations where
priority
it's like,
queue.
Yeah,
is
your
what they call it.
Your priority queue. So it's just like when that model is up, he activates, period. Like that model activates. And it could be that your hand doesn't mesh with what he is, because every model is going to have their abilities, their combat abilities, their psychic abilities, their melee abilities, all of these different things. And in order to trigger them, you have to pay for them using the cards in your hand. So you could be in a situation where, holy shit, the colors of Esper I have in my hand don't jive with his abilities. So now you're going to be in a world of hurt. You're going to have to focus on that miniature aspect, movement, try to mitigate. You're going to have to do these kinds of things. That's what I really appreciated about the game. Also, I roll like shit. So any game where I can 100% eliminate dice rolls, I'm on their side.
Yeah. Abilities basically deal damage as a direct. The only way that you mitigate damage is through redirecting. Certain abilities can stop redirecting. But there's a lot of interesting things that happen in the game. The models generally are very, very well sculpted. Gorgeous ass models. They had amazing painters. The stuff in
their studio painters.
The stuff in the display case was just dazzling.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, their display case could have been the Crystal Brush entry case. Like, let's be perfectly
honest.
Those
three Phantom models that were on the left hand side there, amazing. They were so good. Their weapons were.
Oh my god, and that's exactly it. So it's just like, these are very nicely sculpted models. Their studio painters do them more than justice.
Are they the ex-heavy metal painters? Because that's what it seems like.
These guys would put old Games Workshop heavy metal to shame. Easily. The painters are phenomenal. But for me, I appreciated the game mechanics. Because there's the strategy towards who's going to be in your priority queue, because you have to run through, and it's just like, as one activates, you can then look at anyone in the waiting queue and decide, am I going to put them in priority? Because you basically pre-pick your next three activations, and as one activates, he goes back into the waiting queue, and then you have to pick another model. So when we were playing in our starter set, or our demo game size, there were no decisions to make, because it was an issue of, well, I got my super baller ass hero. He was first because they wanted you to like play with your super baller ass hero and just be like, oh my god, this is amazing. And then you had one heavy dude and a few basic infantry. So as one activated, you'd always just basically put him straight back into your priority queue, but play a bigger game. And suddenly the fact that you can only have three models, that makes life really hard to make your decisions. Because
we can actually have more than three models. Like what he was saying was like the game can go quite larger than that.
Well, no.
But what's in your priority queue is the cards you can put in there. You can have more on the table.
Yeah.
But they won't go into the priority queue until
But that's what I mean, is if I'm looking at it and I have 15 to 20 models on the board, which is kind of what he was saying is going to be generally for a large game, is what you're going to be looking at for that. I have three in my priority queue, so I know who's going to go first, second, third. And once I finish an activation, I have to shuffle through my other 16 cards and say, who do I want to take an action now?
Yeah.
And that to me, that was what sold it to me, was the having to pick your priority queue. I think the deck mechanic is great. Is it better than a D6 mechanic? I think it's cleaner and easier to transport with you. We all know you roll dice, they fall off tables, they go all over, they get cocked. Dice end up everywhere. And I mean, like, shit, when I play Firestorm Armada, I got my big old pool of, like, 30 large dice here. I got my markers over here, my counters. The game is cleaner with a deck mechanic. But when I was just looking at the possibilities of playing larger games and having to prioritize, like, how am I going to set up my priority queue? And remember, like, when I first went, my guy hit your big, scary berserker demon guy, And I knocked him out of your priority queue. And I was just like, holy shit, I can do that with that ability? And that's where it starts to add that flexibility. Because if I know I have an ability that could knock out a model from your priority queue, now all of a sudden I want to go run up and target that. So yeah. I thought the game was not genius. Like, Merc's movement counter was genius, okay? Merc's movement counter was something that I had never seen anywhere else before. I felt like Relic Knights took some of the best parts of miniature gaming and married them with some of the best parts of card gaming. And that's what made the system really fun to play. For me. And I'm sure you can tell, this is also the system that we all kind of jumped into. What helped was all of our Adepticon VIG swag. We could trade straight across. There was a basically pawn shop vendor there. So we just traded some of the swag we didn't want and was able to just jump in, grab some Relic Knights. Even without that, I was excited to get into this game.
Yeah, so we'll jump to that now. We may as well. Yeah, we're getting into Relic Knight. We're going to be looking at playing that. We do have a starter kit for Wild West Exodus, and you already had some stuff beforehand.
Yep.
It was they were the only company smart enough to throw us some free shit.
Yes.
I really did want to get into Mercs, but in general, we found that, like, of the three games, that was the one that we felt was the least
playable outside of
like the area that we had to play with, right? We felt it was the easiest, we felt it was the cheapest,
yep.
We felt that the models were passable, we felt that the game system was really cool, but it just we were like, well, okay, when are we going to play this?
Well,
when are we going to be able to get around to it?
And that's what killed it for me, because I agree. I think of the three games that we played, Mercs had the easiest buy-in. Because straight up, for $45 per person, which is what that Adepticon deal
was. Yeah, well, John had also already bought a shit ton of Relic Knights. So he was like, well, I'm already full ham into Relic Knights, so, like,
I don't need
to go get Mercs or anything else.
Yeah.
So, like, that's part of the reason why Relic Knight ended up being part of the ones we went for.
You know, but again, when we were looking at the four of us that were looking at getting into the Mercs bundle, like you said, it would have been you and Maddie playing until you got bored of it, while I'm just sitting there in Calgary waiting. Doing shit all with it. John sitting in Provost doing shit all for even longer than I am, because he comes up to Edmonton way less often. And I feel like it would have been a game that we would have felt really good about tonight. I know we would have busted out the models.
We would have had
a couple of games tonight. Mm-hmm. And then we would probably never play it ever again.
Yeah.
Unless you and Maddie played it to death and were just like, and the game's not fun anymore.
Yeah.
You know, and
we have figured out the system and what works and what doesn't.
Yeah, no, and that's exactly it. So I think that was what killed Mercs for us, is the lack of anyone else playing it in our local community. Again, Wild West Exodus was smart. They did pitch a starter our way. So, and that's the only reason we will revisit
that game. We'll give it a
try.
We'll give it back again.
We will absolutely give it another shot.
You can't really make an opinion on a three-model game where someone is obviously
I would have never gone anywhere near it had they not pitched a starter.
You know, and that's...
Because I love the models, but I can look at the models and go, yeah, those are cool. And I'm done with it.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, so let's move on here. Let's talk about the Firestorm event that we were a part of, the Schomburg Offensive.
Yep.
It was very, very well run. Josh and company did a fantastic job of putting that thing together. It was exceptionally well organized. The tables were well stocked, if not overstocked in some cases.
The terrain.
But in general, like, yeah, the scenarios worked out. I was actually much happier with the scenario, the way that they handled primary, secondary, and tertiary objectives. I felt like as an overall tournament... measuring stick, that worked pretty well. So I don't have a problem with what they did. I think what they did worked.
Yes.
900 points, I'm still not happy with.
No,
everybody, like, there were so many dreadnoughts, and there were people who showed up with, like, a dreadnought and two battleships, where they just had minimums of everything else.
Yep.
And,
somehow beat that guy.
Yeah, well, I'm not saying that those people won every game. But, like, there was an enormous amount of, like, people taking bare minimums just to fit in their big shit, right?
I think we were the only people that took healthy tier.
Like, absolutely healthy lists. Like, you know, competently built. Never mind. So, I ended up placing 7th. I went 3-1.
No, you placed 6th.
6th. And you placed 7th.
Going 6-1, or 3-1.
You pulled a John Wong special.
John Wong special, 7th. But then John Wong placed 2nd.
Yes.
Screwed it up.
And then John Wong placed 2nd. he got one of the bigger prizes. The guy ahead of him was, like, completely... He won every single game. And the only one that John lost to was the same person that I lost to, was Austin.
Yep.
Who had a very, mean Bakash list and a very, very mean hissy fit. But we'll push over that. No, yes. I'm just kidding. No, don't worry about it, Austin. You're not listening. We're cool.
Right.
So basically, what it came down to is I started against him early.
Yeah, you had game one against Austin.
It is the absolute worst possible matchup I could have. The game that you lost was the worst possible matchup you could have because it was Terrakions versus Terrans.
Yep, so the fleet that ignores everything I do well. Absolutely brutal matchup. John lost to Austin in game two because, again, it's a bad matchup for his Ryushi with just the speed at which the Bakash close and tear through his tier three with their scatter, tear through his, you know, tier two easily with all those high attack dice, and then board the fuck out of his tier one. So, I mean, it's a hard matchup for John's Ryushi, so that was why you guys lost. I lost to literally my Kryptonite. But the fact that three of us went 3-1.
Yeah.
Matt, how was your day?
How was your day, Matt? No, Matt went 1-3.
I had a terrible day.
It was a very, very rough situation for him. He played RSN not knowing that the tables were going to be so stocked with terrain that he would never have an opening fire lane.
Oh, yep. Man.
To actually use the stuff that he built into his list. He didn't spam torpedoes. Like, he had built, like, the proper damage heavy cruiser style RSN list, and the tables just... They weren't conducive to
the
that
one,
at all.
The one game I did that went pretty well for me, besides playing two battleships and a Dreadnought, was I did actually play Lang the second round, which was great.
Yeah, you know, you travel 3,000 kilometers to play the guy you play every week.
In my case, it was close to 5,000, because fuck airlines.
Right?
Yeah, I had an okay weekend. I had a great experience. Let's not get that away. I loved every person I played against. I thought the event was amazingly run. Most of it was my fault for just having a bad day, not really a great fleet list. The first scenario I knew was going to fuck me, and it fucked me again. The tweaks they made to the scenarios from the ones they announced before were great. I thought they were all very smart. It was a solid event. Lots of good players here.
Really, lots of good solid players.
Yeah. The big ups to the guys who from other areas who play. Like, they obviously have their own metas. We have ours. But, man, you can see there's some good players out here.
Yeah, so for anybody who's wondering... My Dreadnought did get destroyed.
By Matt.
And no one paid me.
No one paid him.
I did not get the bounty.
He didn't get a fucking dollar.
This bounty, I just don't believe it exists. No, but I mean, you know, let's talk about it. Because, like, again, I agree. I agree with everything. I had four great opponents. Even the guy that fucking worked me with his Terrakions. Great guy. He ended up winning best sport. I gave him a 5 out of 5. It's not his fault. The fleet he chose to take was my literal Kryptonite, okay? Like, you know, is his fleet beatable? Absolutely. If I had a Ralthosa fleet, I'd have walked all over him.
Yeah.
Hands down. You know, so it's just like, I'm not too worried about anything like that, you know. But great people. For me, the biggest surprise was the amount of terrain. Like, these Firestorm Armada boards had more terrain on them than most 40K boards where we come from. And that's just a fact. Like, these things were fucking loaded. I think the lightest amount of terrain that I played on had 2 planets, 3 debris fields, 3 asteroid fields, and 4 dust clouds.
Seriously, if you see pictures of this event, you will see that you can't go 6 inches without running into something.
Yes. So, I mean, while I don't mind it. I think that all of the scenery adds a tactical element that you have to deal with and you have to move. It makes movement that much more important, especially because in Firestorm Armada, almost all terrain fucks you in some way. There is no such thing as terrain that is 100% safe, and I'm just going to hang out here and good things happen. The galaxy is scary, and the scenery will fuck you over if you try to camp in it. So I appreciate that. What I thought was bad was the fact that with such heavy boards, Dendrenzi and RSN and any fleet that requires shooting lanes was fucked. There was no way. Like,
there's no opportunity whatsoever for these guys to bring their firepower to bear without it being cut in half or -1.
Yeah, and that's exactly it. So it's just like when you're Dendrenzi, because they're always shooting through impeded arcs, are rolling 10 dice, they're fucked. Because, I mean, like, when I played a Dendrenzi player, and this was probably the hardest Dendrenzi list for my Terrans. It was 9 cruisers, it was a battleship, and it was 2 squads of frigates. Like, this is the best Dendrenzi fleet at 900 points to fight my Terrans, and I fucking mauled it. And the final battle log total, and we ended early. We didn't have a time to finish it. He had two ships remaining on the board. Battle log was 11 to negative 6. And it was literally because I hugged cover. I knew exactly how to shut his firepower down to nothing so that my shields would run everything else off. And like I said, those boards fucked over fleets that needed firing lanes. And yeah, if you didn't play one of those fleets, you're loving life.
Yeah, if you had a fleet that could get in there, get close, maneuver, could board
like Bakash. So if you're playing Bakash,
or a director player, or even a Rathosa player, like if you had any of those or Solarians, which were good in boarding and combat, if you could get close, you had a lot of cover to get these, so you're not taking any damage, and if you could fight at range band one, you were probably loving life, or you had tons of indirect weaponry like your fleet lang and the Takarians, like. If you didn't have the Tarakans, yeah.
Fuck those guys.
If you didn't have anything like that, like if I would have known what we're, because we don't play on a lot of terrain on our boards. Like we have like maybe 3 to 4 pieces at the most.
Yeah, well, I would say that most of our boards are usually 5, one in each quarter, one in the middle.
And they're bigger pieces. And they're not these little bitty, little bitty asteroid belts.
Totally. Or just a piece of carpet put on the table that's like, oh, this is a dust field. It's only like probably 4x3, and it's like really long and small. And I'm not saying that's a bad way to play. It's just saying that us from where we're from, we weren't used to it. So you could see that people who were used to it, they had the proper fleets built for it.
They had fleets built for it because, you know, what are Bakash good at? They're good at getting in close and mauling you in range band one and boarding. And with boards that thick with terrain, it's a given. There is no way you're not going to get into your ideal range band one and you're not going to have your maximum firepower, your maximum damage potential every single game you play. What are Tarakians? They are 100% indirect weapons. Sure, he has two ships with beams, but who fucking shoots them? So it's just like they're 100% indirect, so they ignore terrain. They ignore all of the things that are present on the board. These were the fleets that were on the top tables all day. And there's no surprise.
Bakash and Tarakians were on the top tables typically throughout the tournament. There were a couple who weren't, but generally they all were.
But we're saying that these guys weren't good players. They were great players.
No, they were very good players. Nobody's saying that.
It's just that when you have a great fleet and you have boards that are helping you play, you're going to have a better chance of winning most of your games.
Yeah, I do not believe a Dendrenzi player finished in the top 50% of the tournament because the boards were literally against them.
Oh, the bottom tables were filled with Dendrenzi and RSN.
Yeah.
Yeah, and of course they were, because there's no possible way.
The only RSN guy that was near the top got pantsed in the last game. Yeah. Now, that was part dice and part John Wong's rolling sixes strategy. But really, no, in general, like, John did very, very well. He had good dice. And he was playing against the meta for this area by taking a lot of wings, by taking bombers and things of that nature, because these guys have kind of built their stuff around
all of this scenery.
Right, all this scenery and this idea of, like, rush in, do as much damage as possible, you know, crush your opponent, see them driven before you, and kind of the RSN threw that for a loop. Now, the Ryushi threw that for a loop.
The RSN suffered like everyone else.
Yeah, they really did. But no, we generally did pretty good. No, Canadians did not sweep the top three. We had one in the top three. We had three in the top 10. So, I mean, in general, for percentage-wise,
yeah, I mean,
we all did really good, and we brought a kid, and we feel bad for him, and he'll probably get better eventually. Right, Matt?
Listen, we're just going to send him down to the AHL. He's going to get some experience.
That's right. You just got to bring that confidence back up.
And then we can call him back up, give him his shot again. I mean, the kid has talent. I mean, no one's denying that.
It's too bad I'm a lazy painter. That's what it is.
Right. Michigan guys were a lot of fun. Everyone had a great time. It was a very, very well-run event. The scenarios were interesting. Not my favorite, but pretty interesting. I'm still almost feel like the stock scenarios would have worked just fine.
Yeah, I do agree. I think stock scenarios are great. I disliked Scenario 4 the most.
Scenario 4 was kind of a...
Scenario 4...
Who gives a shit? Like, it was you finishing the last two pages of your essay.
Oh, it totally was, where they're just like, I have a third
point. And then Abe Lincoln killed all the Indians, and he saved all the slaves, yay.
Right, you know, and that's really what it was, because, I mean, basically, you had three hardcore stacked with special rules and crazy victory condition missions. None of them were bad. Again, my, you know, because two of my three wins were because I was mitigating battle log loss. I was trying, I was taking advantage of all the easy points I could get, take squads to half, finish off if the shots were there. But I was playing the scenario. So in my first two games, I was able to capture all three of the primary, secondary, and tertiary. Well, not the tertiary in game two. I don't think fucking anyone got that because it was
hard to get. There were people who did
get But you it, have to table
But it was like, yeah, it was really kind of
So like I said, I got primary, secondary, tertiary in the first game, primary, secondary in the second game. By virtue of the fact that I know I'm Terrans, I can hang around. I can sit on an objective and hang out all day because I got the shields. I got everything I need. So that worked very well. But by the time you got to the fourth one, they stopped caring because it was just long table edges for deployment, like short table edges for deployment. So you had really long deployment zones, which my Dendrenzi opponent took advantage of. He only deployed about 9 inches up, so halfway into it. Not that it mattered, because with all the terrain, he could never pull a clear shot, so what do I fucking care? But the primary objective was, how many models do you kill? And I feel like, as people who come from a meta where you build a balanced list, we had the uphill battle in that game, because holy shit. You needed the very last turn to pull out a win, even though he had one model left on the board, because he just killed all of your small tier threes.
Yeah, the primary objective in that one was kill the most ships, and I had like 12 Corvettes, and his fleet consisted of 13 models.
Yes.
So when what ended up happening was I was crushing him. I killed him to a ship, and I mean, he was a great guy. William was a fucking blast. But I mean, my dice were hot. It was happening for me, but I still was unable to get the primary objective because I had wiped his fleet out to a ship and he had killed less than 160 points worth of stuff.
Yep. And that was a draw on the primary. My game, on the other hand, he had 5 frigates, 9 cruisers and a battleship. I had 8 frigates and 2 escorts. That's all he killed. On the very end of the game, on the very end of, in the end phase of the last turn, a corrosive marker that I failed to repair 2 turns in a row killed a cruiser. That was the only non-tier 3 ship that he killed, and it took me to that very last turn to finish off a cruiser and another frigate to get the primary objective win. So like I said, my battle log was 11-6, and he was winning that game until turn 6.
The one thing...
That was where I said, they had literally zero fucks to give. This was a scenario that was designed for this bullshit meta of every single player I played from the area that Josh is from took 2 minimum tier 3 squads and regrouped them on turn 1. Every player. So of course this scenario favors
them. The one thing that I felt that I didn't like about scenario 4 was that it was pretty much like, if you kill your opponent, you get 13 extra battle log points at the end. You could win by 4 and draw. Here's 13 extra battle log points, because essentially they're saying that if you win, you should get the primary, you should get the secondary, and the tertiary.
Well, the tertiary was only available if you're, and this was what I hated about it, is if I FSD'd a unit off the board to avoid the battle log hits, which you should do. We have talked about this part of the game. Yeah. This is part of the like game. If I do it, my opponent gets the tertiary. Yeah. So I was just like, what the fuck is wrong?
I save myself from losing 4 points for shunting out my dreadnought, but I'm giving my opponents two more battle log points on top of it.
And if you play someone who's just like, fuck FSD, I don't ever...
Yeah, I've never FSD.
Yeah, see, why, how can you ever get that?
You know, and that's what happened in my game. So like I said, the scenario was very clearly designed by this meta, and they're like, oh, it'll be hilarious because no one ever takes more than 4 frigates. So when we, like I said, we showed up, shit, if I'd played my frigate swarm, I'd have lost.
You'd have lost.
I would have absolutely lost. Cause like for me, for a moment, I was wondering what my opponent was doing. Cause for the first few turns, like he was ignoring my dreadnought, ignoring my shield cruisers, ignoring my battle station and just shooting my missionary frigates. And I was like, what, you know, and then shooting at my escorts. So I'm like, what the fuck is he doing? And there was like turn 4 when I read the primary and I did the count. And even though at this point I have a landslide victory on the battle log, I am losing the primary. And I was like, what the fuck is going on? So, I mean, I shifted it into high gear. I was fast playing targets. You know, I did what I needed to win. But why would you create a mission that allows for a player that is almost bottomed out of the battle log to win a primary objective.
Well, you're,
that
you're,
makes no fucking sense.
You're punishing fleet building at that point. You're saying, well, don't, you take, absolutely are. Don't take in tier threes, end, don't shunt out.
In the end, it just shouldn't have happened. I think, like we said, it was the end of the essay. They never thought it through. They may not have play-tested it as much, but in general, yes, the tournament was very well run. We had a great time. I think Canada showed up for sure. And, yeah, it was a lot of fun, you know. We met a lot of great people. We had a lot of fun. It was really good. All right, so let's finish this off. Let's talk about the swag bags, because we all had the very important gamer ticket. It was $100. And when we showed up, we had an enormous swag bag full of shit that was provided to us. So what I got asked a lot when I was walking around with that red backpack was the VIG ticket worth it?
100%.
Absolutely. I'll tell you this right now. I haven't paid for my hotel room yet, but up until this point, I have not spent money on anything other than food, booze, and a laser pointer, which was a fucking amazing.
Yep.
I have not bought any models. I haven't bought any games. I haven't bought any anything. I am bringing home something close to like 7 boxes worth of models.
Yep.
From everything. That was because we played in the Firestorm event and we got free swag. We played, we got the VIG package, which had like 3 boxes of free swag. We had probably about 12 special models that were given to us by various companies for free swag. We had all these coupons. We had all this extra stuff. Like, what you were saying was like, even if I turn around and sell the War Machine box and the Drop Zone Commander box, I've probably just about made up the cost of my ticket.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, the VIG swag bag has a ton of one-off shit. So you get a model for this, some cards for Firefly, a Dixit card, a model for this, a Robotech guy. But really, really what makes it worth part of...
$70.
Which is $70 value. We all took part in it. I'm actually kind of excited. I'm very happy with the models that...
Yeah, they're really nice.
Yeah, all of the models for Wrath of Kings are very nice. So expect something on Wrath of Kings.
I'm going to play some fucking crab, people.
Lang's got crabs. He went to Chicago. He came back with crabs. It's unfortunate.
And it squids. Squids itch the worst.
Absolutely. So, like I said, you get a Wrath of Kings starter. You got a War Machine starter, one of their starter boxes. And you got a Drop Zone Commander starter, and you got a Robotech RPG model. Thankfully, there was that one awesome vendor that's basically a wargaming pawn shop. Because we were able to walk down with our Drop Zone Commander boxes, which we would literally never play because Planetfall for life, yo.
For real.
That's right. So we all walked down with our Drop Zone Commander and our Battletech, because why would we ever play either of these games? We have no interest.
Well, your
and
the guy was just like,
Battletech, the game that has not updated itself since it was created. That's right. Ooh, every fucking Battletech model is still an F-15.
Yeah. yeah, it is. But like I said, so we walked down to the place and we're just like, hey, we're really interested in Relic Knight starters. Are you, can we trade these Drop Zone Commander boxes and this Robotech for a Relic Knight starter? And he was like, yeah, absolutely. So that's how we got into Relic Knights, is we literally traded swag from the VIG bag to get our Relic Knight stuff. So walking away from it, just from the VIG ticket, I have a War Machine starter. I have my Relic Knight starter due to some trades. I have some unique minis. Like, we all have a Jesse James for Wild West Exodus.
Bunch of special edition,
unique
stuff.
We got Wrath of King starters. I mean, just the retail value of these free starter boxes, because we had 3 of them in there, is well over.
I'd say about cost. $200.
Yeah, it's about
$200. Total is about $200 worth of swag.
Yes, for your $100 VIG, not to mention the fact
that... Yeah, we got paint. We got a bunch of paint on top of it.
Well, and the other thing is, with the VIG, and this is
something... You got that high-ass brush, that like really nice brush.
Oh, that's a really nice brush. I can't wait to actually use it. But the other thing to keep in mind, and I don't think anyone except maybe Matt took advantage of this, because I know that with your flight and with my arrival time, we didn't, but like... The VIG lets you register first.
Yep.
So if you're there on Wednesday and you want to register, you can register first as a VIG. You have exclusive access to the vendor hall, because I know that when the vendor hall opened, because of the way Privateer Press does it, is they bring pre-release models to cons, There was a line 300 people deep at Privateer Press's shop for the moment that the vendor hall opened. If you were a VIG, you could have just walked up, picked up anything you wanted an hour before the plebs get in. Not
the
to mention,
plebs.
Right? Not to mention all of the Forge World exclusives. You get first crack at everything. So, I mean, if I was going to come next year, I think I would organize my travel a little bit better.
Yeah.
I would absolutely get the VIG again. I would organize my travel a little bit better so I could hit the vendor hall when it was still stock full of stuff. Because our biggest disappointment is we ran the Ninja Division thing. We're talking about it like, we're like, yeah, let's get into it. And Ninja Division's booth had two factions worth of starters.
Because they had sold through
everything. They had sold through everything. Because, like, again, we were doing our demos on Sunday, so this isn't a bad thing for them. And that's why we ended up going to the pawn shop to pick up our stuff. So it was, yay, we can trade mm-hmm. this shit we don't want. But yeah, worth every penny.
Absolutely worth every penny. I really liked all the coupons. I loved the way that it was laid out in the sense that...
Oh, what about the Costco coupon? Were you a fan of the Costco
coupon? I thought the Costco coupon was hilarious. It was almost like the people who had put the swag bag together knew how fucking expensive this place was going
to
be.
Yeah, because they were just like, hey, everybody, if you go to Costco, and there's one literally across the overpass.
That's
like,
correct.
You could walk there. It would take you 10 minutes because there's a sidewalk.
Go buy all your water.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's just like, hey, if you buy a membership, you can get a $20 Costco gift card. And yeah, they absolutely knew how fucking ridiculous the prices here were. They're just like, dude, Costco. Just fucking go to Costco. And that's why it was slid in there. It's like the you know, the pleas for help from kidnapping victims where they're like, I need to put something in that lets them know that I'm in danger, but won't let my captors know that I'm reaching out. That was the Costco flyer.
Hi, I'd like to order a pizza with extra freedom.
You send the total and help
to this address?
Could you please have an officer deliver that pizza? All right, so that brings us to the weekly listener poll question for this week. The question that we have for you guys is, what do you look for when you are looking for a new game? Is it models? Is it gameplay? Or is it unique mechanics? Those are the questions that we have for you guys. You can find that at jadedgamercast.com. But right now, we have to go sign some
postcards. That has been Jaded Gamercast for this week. My name is Lang. I'm Nathan. And I'm Maddie. Have a good one. Cheers.